Thanks for listening to the Stimulate Run podcast. If you like what you hear, remember to subscribe, leave a rating and a review. If you would like to get in touch or have future guest suggestions, please make contact via email or slide into DMs on any of the social channels. Here's your host, Erwin, with this episode's guest.
Barry Holland has completed 48 consecutive Comrades Marathons. Amongst them, results such as 22 silver, 6 Bull Rowans, 19 bronze, and a magnificent PB of 6:29.22. Legend is a word that gets thrown around, and many people have heard me say that on this podcast before, but I think many who know Barry and his story can probably agree that that title really does sit comfortably next to his name. In this episode, we'll unpack his journey, not just in Comrades, because I think his running journey would be great to unpack that with him and pass that on to many runners out there forging their way as well. But welcome to the podcast, Barry Holland.
Thank you so much.
I think I've said to a few guests, 2023 was a bucket list year for guests. And I've searched for you quite frequently and how to get in touch with you, read the book cover to cover within days, and well and truly another one on the bucket list that I'm happy to have ticked off to get you on, especially going into your attempt at 49 consecutive Comrades. So the next 2 weeks, I dare say there'll be a lot of interest for you on the speaking tour as well.
Yeah, very much so. I'm already getting filled up.
Do you ever get tired of hearing the accomplishments? And then do you also ever have moments where you might be having a coffee or just sitting on the balcony and you just reflect? Do you have those moments?
Yeah, lots of them. First of all, I think I'm extremely blessed to have managed to do 48, as you said in your intro, and now running number 49. And we've called this 49 the stepping stone. And obviously that's a acknowledgement of the fact that I'm going to 50 next year. And that'll be, when you talk about those moments of reflection, I think it's going to be very special. The 49, the 50 years are the culmination of something incredibly special. The first man in history to obviously run 50 Comrades, excuse me, but more important, well, not more importantly, but obviously quite amazingly, to run them consecutively. And so a lot of that reflection at times is that, hell, and people have said it to me countless times, how the hell did you get there? How did you not land up injured? How did you not land up sick? Those are, hard, hard. Well, they're not that hard to answer because I've always considered myself a clever runner. And I've always known that if I'm approaching injury, I know how to back off and look after my body. And I've also always been very, very careful to try and not get sick and do all the right things. So yes, being a clever runner has helped me, but those moments of reflection are certainly there that you just say, how the hell did I get here? 49 consecutive runs, it's just going to be quite incredible.
And I will obviously get into your fundamentals and your beliefs as we go, but I'm a firm believer that there might be an ounce of luck, but you would be doing the right things to also get yourself there year after year. Like you said, if something's coming on, you respect that niggle or that injury. And I dare say you've learned to leave the ego behind to get to that start line every year.
Yeah, leaving the ego behind and putting aside the testosterone is sometimes very difficult because we're all human. I'm competitive by nature, as I mentioned to you earlier. I've never left anything on the road. I've always gone for it, and given my all, whatever distance race I was racing, or certainly in Comrades, I've tried to do my very, very best. But you do need to be a clever runner. And where I've been clever is, for example, and this is perhaps the most important thing, I have a complete break after Comrades. A mistake made by so many thousands upon thousands of runners is that run their comrades. They have a week off, maybe 10 days, and then they're back because that's what they love doing. And so they bow down to the fact that they love this thing, and why should I stop doing it? But what they need to realize is that when you've finished running comrades, especially on the down run, but up or down for that matter, you know, you've literally got millions of little microscopic muscle tears in your legs. And you have to respect that. You have to let those things heal. And if you don't, that's when, you know, you might not be injured in that particular year, but I promise it'll come back to bite you in 2 or 3 or 4 or 10 years' time. And part of my longevity undoubtedly has been having a proper rest after comrades. It's a minimum for me of 6 weeks. 6 weeks, I don't put my shoes on, not one step on the road. I might do other things, non-impact. I might ride a stationary bike. I might go into the gym, you know, whatever. But I don't do any kind of impact training. And that's what obviously running is. So it's a minimum of 6 weeks and more likely closer to 2 months where I don't run at all. And I think that's a massive part of being on the road after all these years.
It is. But how do you prepare yourself mentally for that, though? You know, I personally found that a challenge. You come off the cliff. It's this emotional cliff where the euphoria of the day, you finish. And then, you know, the next day there's the high. The day after that, the gloss disappears. And then you're sitting there going, yeah. It's almost like an empty room. And you go, now what do we do? I'm taking a break. I can't for a few months. What do I do? How over the years have you developed that emotional fall to prevent, you know, yourself getting impacted?
I think it's once again, it's a mindset. I mean, you know, I think we know, and I will certainly will advocate completely that running comrades is 30% in the legs and 70% in your mind, the muscle between your ears. That's the most important one of the lot. And that you apply that same mental application to what happens after comrades. You don't want to sort of fall into this trap of saying, oh, I'm dying to get out there again. What am I? I'm not doing anything. I'm you know, as I said, go and find other things to do or just enjoy the rest. I've got myself to a point now where when I finish comrades, I know it's the start of my rest. And I'm now very, like, really happy in my space then after comrades that I'm now resting. I'm resting. And that's just, I'm loving it. I don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and get ready to go and train. I can just sleep in. And you know, I just embrace all those things and say I'm going to enjoy them. I'll be honest with you. When I get to the end of sort of the 6 week type of area towards going to 2 months, I'm getting a little bit antsy. I want to go and run. I'm able to take it on, not fuss it, and just go and do some of the nice things that we don't get to do when we got a massive training load on.
Yeah. I mentioned kind of wanting to speak about your general running history and not just your comrades' history. Can you take us, I suppose, down memory lane and when it first came into your life, and then I suppose throw in the journey to silver, because in your book, you kind of mentioned that you were identified, but you also identified you had some talent and you had to put yourself out there and be part of the chase to get that.
You know, interesting, because a lot of people go into comrades having had some kind of, let's call it athletics career. I had zero athletics career. I wasn't really much of a runner at school. I had a little inkling. I was at a school of 1,000 boys in Durban North. In those days, it was called Northlands Boys High. We had 1,000 boys in the school, and we had an annual cross-country where the whole school had to participate. And I ran just like all the other boys, no training or anything like, just go and run the thing. And I remember I came 27th. So I realized then that obviously I had something inside me, but I still really did nothing about that when I went to university. I still didn't run. But there's no shadow of a doubt that as a Durban boy, running comrades, or the comrades, shall we say, is part of your DNA. It's there. It's like very much that thing, you know, why do men climb mountains? Yeah, because they're there. Why do we go and run comrades? Because it happens just to be there. It's part of my DNA. And that's what I wanted to do. And I mentioned my book where, you know, I wanted to run when I was 18, because in those days you could still run when you were 18. Now it's 20, of course, and didn't make it. And then started training when I was 19 and still didn't make it because I've met nobody in the morning. And I thought this was a stupid, really lonely sport. And it wasn't until I was 20 that I, you know, bumped into a whole bunch of guys early one morning. And that was the start of my real running journey. So my running journey was really started out by wanting to run Comrades. My first time at my maiden voyage at Comrades was 7:52. So that immediately did tell me, and I knew nothing, absolutely nothing about what it takes to run Comrades and what I really should be doing. And, you know, and I ran my 7:52. And then with finding out a little bit more about what this great race was all about, I found out the 7:52 wasn't bad for a first time out there. You know, it was pretty reasonable. And that's when I started to say, well, hold on, if I could do 7:52 now with some better application, a little bit more knowledge and finding out more about this wonderful sport, maybe I could run a silver. And then I had two disastrous years, which I do talk about in my book. The first one was I got flu and actually got out of bed at home. I was living with my folks to go and run. And I was completely, I shouldn't have done that. No, we know that today, that, you know, your heart's a muscle and flu affects your muscles. And hey, it was silly, it was dumb, but we still did it. And I finished at 9:23. Completely shattered. And then the next year, I got bitten by a spider, and not long before Comrades. So another disastrous year. And I think my time there was 8:30 odd, or 8:37 or something like that. And it wasn't until my fourth year that I now got back on track and then was able to achieve my first silver. Your running journey at Comrades, to me, is so much about understanding who you are, where your limits are, and then getting out there to go and stretch yourself and get as close to those limits as you possibly can, you know.
I think, like, just before we hit record, we spoke about the fear of failure and turning up and giving it a crack. And obviously from what you're saying, you know, you enter your first one, okay, unbeknownst to you, and you still gave it a crack. But then every year after that, you were going back and chasing it and fail, such is life. How do you, I suppose, to people running aspirants this year, what do you say to them about that fear of failure? Because it is it's a big price to pay. You've put in 6 months to this thing, some people years, especially from overseas as well, is another component. But do you think you kind of do have to lay it all on the line as well if you really are going after a time?
I think you do. And again, I think you've got to preface those remarks, if you like, or those thoughts with finding out who you are. And you'll often need to go and ask other runners who you are. Because, you know, and it sounds crazy, but you know, you'd have to go and speak to your club captain or a more experienced runner around you. I mean, obviously, so many people come to me today and say, what can I do? I say, well, you know, I don't really know exactly what you can do, but now tell me your times. Tell me what you've done. What's your marathon time? I start right down at 8Ks. 8K time trials are your best indicator. I can tell from my 8K time trial, though I used to be able to, exactly what I would do Comrades in, by knowing what I would run, be able to run 8K time trial in. So it's those indicators are critical. So it's so important to start finding out who you are. And that's what, that was the massive part of my journey, was saying, I was pretty sure by that stage who I was as a runner and what, where my talent level stood at and what my best possible time was. And I was running a silver, but with my finding out who I was, I was saying I could run 6.5 hours. Now that's a massive gap. That's you know, from silver, let's say a silver at 7:20 or 7:25 or whatever, let's say an ordinary silver, down to 6.5 is like 10 lifetimes That's so far away, it's like 10 lifetimes. So the only way I knew that I was going to get there was to go for it and not to be scared of failing. And I did fail. I failed many, many times trying to get under 7 hours, because that's your next, my next thing was to get under seven. Running silver was one thing. To get under seven would be then my launch pad to get to 6.5, because the set, you know, you had, you're not going to go from 7:20 to 6.5 hours. You have to get it down in slightly more bite-sized chunks. You have to get down to sort of 6:45, under seven, and then 6:45, and then down to 6.5, unless you're exceptionally talented and you're just going to blast through to 6.5. So I was on that journey, and in that journey, I failed many, many times trying to get under that seven. Many, many, many times. When I say that, define failure, I wasn't finishing in 8.5 or 9 hours or whatever. I was still, but I was only running 7:11, 7:12, you know, 7:11 again. Maybe, you know, I was running good silvers, but they weren't sub seven. So I think that fear of failure is you got to put it aside. You've got to be prepared to go for it and understand how the relative term of that failure. Is it an absolute, you know, blast out failure? Have you collapsed and barely finished the race? Or have you just not achieved the time that you wanted? I was in that category of just not getting where I wanted. And something we can talk about more, but I had to decide how I was going to do it. The next thing came for me was the how. How did I get there? You need to be a lot more scientific and understand how to get there.
Yeah, well, I think I've got a question about realistic goals, but we can come back to that. Let's talk about the how then. So the how back then to the how in current day is very different, but the times are the same, right? You know, the winning times have stayed exactly the same. The things that are available, information, the winning times are no different than they were 20 years ago. What do you think of the state of running? And then the fundamentals, are they exactly the same or should they be the same?
I think those fundamentals are absolutely the same. I don't think they've ever changed. As you quite rightly say, winning times are improving, you know, with some different things involved. And you know, the course is slightly shorter this year, so we might see a record this year. So those kind of factors come into play. But generally speaking, no, it's the fundamentals are absolutely the same. I've always had there's three pillars that hold up a runner. That is your DNA, your natural talent, okay? That there is obviously your mental capacity. We just, in terms of runners, we call it how good is your head. And then finally, there's your training. There's only three things that make you up as a runner. So if we go back to the DNA, that's you thank your parents for that. You can't change that. Thank you, mom and dad. Now, you know, my parents were not athletes at all. Not at all. So, you know, genetics are, to me, a most fascinating subject, because I had completely non-athletic parents, and yet I landed up with a fair chunk of talent. You know, not as talented as a lot of others out there, but certainly a lot more talented than others as well. So I got some talent, and you can't change that. Then you've obviously got your head. How good is your head? Can you take the pain? Comrades, if you can't take the pain, you're never likely to succeed really well at comrades. I have a number of friends over the years who were better athletes than I was, and yet had comrades' records far, far worse than mine, because they didn't have the mental application, that ability to take the incredible punishment that you take, excuse me, over the last say 20 Ks or so, 25 Ks of the race. So that mental application is absolutely critical if you want to succeed at comrades. And then the last aspect, of course, is your training. And when I sat down to say, why cannot I not get under 7 hours? I know I've got the talent. I said, by all my times, my marathon time, my 8K time, trial time, my 21K time, all of my PBs, clearly indicated that I could run 6.5 hours. Not easily, and I would be at the very, very edge of my talent, but it was there. Everything was a clear indicator that I could do that. I had proved that I had the head. I'd proved already with some of my comrades where the chips were down and I was able to fight like hell and come through and beat those last 20-25 Ks. So I was comfortable that my head was good. So the only thing that I could possibly do to get myself under 7 hours was change my training. And that's exactly what I did. And I changed it quite dramatically. Being a Durban boy, I was brought up on a diet of massive kilometers, very, very big Ks. And I used to have a peak of 4 weeks. My 4 week peak of my training was the first week was 160 Ks, the second was 170, the third was 180, and I peaked out at 190 Ks. And in a lot of today's terms, guys look at that and they shake their heads and say, "Oh, you're absolutely crazy." And well, certainly for me, I was, because what I found out was that those Ks were too big for me. I was actually landing up tired, and those Ks were becoming counterproductive. So I took those 4 weeks, and this was more gut feel, if you like, than science. I said, right, I'm going to take the 4 weeks, I'm going to make them 7 weeks, and I'm going to take those maximum Ks of 160 up to 190, and I'm not going to go a step over 145. 145 Ks maximum in a week. And I went from my best at that stage was 709, and I went to 645. Bang, one smack. And that was purely changing the training. So one of the three pillars was out. The other two were not out. They were perfectly in sync, but the third one was out. And by changing that, I achieved what I did. So it was a case of using some clear logical thinking, understanding yourself, understanding where you can get to, what's your potential best, and then mapping out and finding a way to get there, and never be scared to fail, ever.
What about the quality of your training? So did that change? You know, I look at 190K a week, and you could probably say there was, you know, what people would say was junk miles. There was a lot of, you know, time on legs out there for the sake of racking up mileage. When you say 45 Ks, I dare say your quality became better. However, you still did a lot of easy running.
Yeah, I think I've always trained on the ancient principle. It's not rocket science and it's not new. It's as old as the hills, and it'll be around for the next 50, 100 years of distance running. Trained on the hard, easy principle. And I mean, you train one day hard and the next day easy. The next day hard and easy, because you unless you're running those easy runs easy, you can't run the hard runs hard. Fascinating. There was a guy out in South Africa speaking at a symposium. He was an English coach. In fact, he was a more of a triathlon coach than a long distance running coach. And he came out here, and at the symposium, he actually said, "My observation of South African road running is that you run your hard runs too easy and your easy runs too hard." And if you think about that, what happens is you land up with mediocrity in the middle. I was taught and brought up on the fact that when you did your quality work, you did it flat out. You must, at the end, you must be absolutely finished. And the next day when you're running easy, yeah, you're running easy, but you're running easy deliberately, so that you're allowing your body time to recover to get to the next day, which is harder again, and you're able to then perform. So I don't know that we always pack those distances with too much, let's substitute easy for lazy, sort of lazy running. I think it was always, because in that 190, we were still doing a lot of quality work. And that was another factor that was actually leaving me just too tired. Just absolutely finished, you know. And you know, taught us that really go into comrades undertrained, not overtrained. And I was going into comrades overtrained so often, but not realizing, thinking I was a hero because I was doing 190 Ks in a week, and I wasn't being a hero at all. So you say, yeah, we did a lot of quality work, But I was taught to do my quality properly, hard, you know, not at half pace. You can't, otherwise don't bother to do it. If you're going to do quality at half pace, don't bother. Just have an easy run. You know?
But then I look at now, you know, and I kind of get on my soapbox a bit for this, where I feel that everybody wants to do the sexy stuff, so the hard, because you get your thumbs up and your kudos, but nobody wants to run at 6.5 minutes a K because it looks too slow.
Nowadays I have to run at 6.5.
You know, but even for the person who, let's say a Bill Rowan runner, on your recovery day, just go out for the cruise, but you almost don't, it's the ego side as well, where I think you don't want people to see you running slow, and that's generalizing, but we seem to really like the sexy, and we like to do the track reps hard and want to do them every day. And when we go out for an easy long run, that's now turned into a bit of a race effort. And then you get to Comrades Day and you hit 50K and you wonder why your legs aren't working.
You're speaking so much sense now, and it's just what you're observing is the malaise of, I would say, more than likely 70-80% of all long distance runners. You're quite right. They're not prepared to think through their running, and they're easily led. They're like a bunch of sheep. So I see it in our own club. I see the guys go out in the morning and they are like, we've all got different levels, and you've got the top of the group it'll be our club captain and a couple of those guys with him who can run, you know, like I used to be in the day, back in my day when I was racing Comrades, who can run in the morning at 4.5 minutes a K comfortably. I mean, I used to be able to run 4.5 minutes a K any day of the week comfortably. And those guys should be running, the other guys in the group, shall we say, should be running more at, say, 5.5 minutes a K. But no, because of the testosterone, and as you say, it's sexy to be able to go and say, hell, I was running alongside the club captain today and I felt fantastic. But how many days will you feel fantastic? Or after a month of that, will you be actually feeling far too tired? And your training load is just, you've allowed yourself to get sucked in to incorrect training and irresponsible training. As I said, go back to that point I've made. You know, I'm running my 49th Comrades because I considered myself a clever runner. And around me every day of my life, I see not very stupid runners. In fact, to not be hard a point is that absolutely stupid, because they just don't allow themselves to train correctly on that hard, easy principle, where go and have fun on that hard day where you, and I mean, there's no shadow of a doubt, it's lovely to run like that. It's fantastic when you feel incredible after the run, but you have to be prepared to run easy the next day. And, you know, these bodies are not machines. They're not made of steel and titanium, and they are just flesh and blood. And you have to treat them with respect. Otherwise they'll break down and they won't perform, and they won't give you the time that you want unless you respect them.
Well, then do you also think that's where the unrealistic goals come in? Like, I just see, even though the field has gotten bigger, you kind of sit back and, okay, you might be able to go do your long run every Sunday with the guy running 5 minutes a K, but he's talking to you and you're not responding because you're working too hard. And then you do that and go, geez, I've done 5 months with this guy. I'm now going to go out and try and break silver. But the reality is you're probably an 8:20 to 8.5 hour guy. And on Comrades Day, you go, no, forget that. I'm going out because I've spent 6 months with this guy running comfortably.
Yeah.
And then you sit back and for 6 months, you try and wonder why. Do you feel that there's a lot of unrealistic goal expectations, but it leads from the training?
There are. And again, I go back to this point that you need to know who you are. So go and unpack your other times. You've gone out and you've raced a 21K. Then you've gone and you've obviously, as you're building your K's have built up and your training has progressed, you're now going to go and race a marathon. Things like that. You're going to have to qualify for Comrades. So you have to, you know, race a marathon, and you want to improve your seeding. So you're going to race hard. I certainly can tell you from your times, but you need to go as a runner, you need to go and find out from those times where you belong. And if you're if your marathon time is, let's say, 3.5 hours, that's your marathon, going out hard and leaving nothing on the road, you're doing 3.5 hours, then you're not a 5 minutes a K guy on Comrades Day. The 5 minutes a K is silver. And if you're running 3.5 hours, you've got absolutely zero chance of getting a silver. So you need to go and find out who you are. And if that means, as I said earlier, talking to other people, talking to more experienced runners, talking to your club captain, talking to whoever, you know, phoning Barry Holland if you like, but find out who you are as a runner and then go and train accordingly to that. And then try and have the, if you're going to use your mind, there's this incredible thing we have. I've said the one pillar of the three pillars. If you've got going to use this incredible mind to go and run Comrades hard and achieve your best possible times, use that same tool when you're training. Because if you're not using that tool when you're training, then you're just being completely unfair to yourself. Don't go and run at 5 minutes a K on a Sunday morning when you should, in fact, be running at 5.5 minutes a K. You need to, you know, you need to take ownership, right, of this thing. We've got to own who we are and not just get sucked in think you're a hero because you're running next to the guy who's, as you said, chatting and talking and telling jokes at 5 minutes a K when you are completely silent because all you're doing is battling to breathe, you know.
Because you can't just turn up and do it on the day. If you've never run, it's quite hard to run slower. You know, you said yourself, you go and run 6.5 minutes a K, but on Comrades Day, you're not running 6.5 minutes a K, you're running slower. So how do you also, even though you've done a lot, how do you prepare yourself to be running 7.5 minutes a K?
Yeah, I think what you need to understand always about Comrades is that you're always going to be, you're normally going to be running slower than your training. And, I don't advocate that people must go and train only at their Comrades racing pace. So, you know, yes, when I was running Silvers, which is running 5 minutes a K on Comrades Day, I was training at 4.5 minutes a K. But you're only running 10 or 12 kilometers in the morning. You're not running 90. So yes, you're always going to be running faster in your training with the understanding that simply because of the severity of Comrades, the distance and the hills, etc., you're going to be running at a slower average pace. But that won't worry you on the day. It shouldn't worry you on the day because I think your body and your mind naturally just, in a sense, compute. Hold on, this is 90. Over mountains, you know, I'm not going out here at 5 minutes a K. I'm going out at 6 or 6.5 or whatever the case might be. So, yeah, I think it becomes a natural thing that you will train faster. And it's never really concerned me. I've never said to myself, oh, I must go and train so I can run at a slower pace. I've known that I've trusted my training, that my training being a combination of my quality work and then my slower running on the weekend and some of the days of the week, that combination will then prepare me for whatever time I've decided I'm going to go and try and run Comrades in. You know, as long as whatever time you decide is within your first column, which is your DNA, first your talent level. Yeah, you can decide you'd like to go and run 5 minutes to go on Comrades Day. But, you know, if you weren't given any challenge, then, yeah, forget about that. Just go and be happy to run 9.5 hours, you know, because that's who you are.
It's a good segue into one of the favorite lines that I've heard you say a couple of times, and it'd be good to get you to unpack it, and that is plan your race and race your plan. I've had I almost want to write it on my mirror before every race build up to have that there. Like, can you kind of just give us the backstory or what you actually mean by that?
Yeah, so Comrades is so far and such a difficult race with a whole bunch of very distinct sections to it. You know, I divide Comrades up, for example, into about 5 or 6 sections. And when I talk about the course at Comrades, and I talk to runners before Comrades at their Comrades breakfast or whatever, or even at our own club, I divide it up into bite-sized chunks, because I don't think you can stand on the start line of Comrades and face a 90K race and saying, I'm running 90Ks. I think it's a lot easier to say, on the down run, I'm running 18 Ks to Umlaas Road to the highest point. And that's, I've got to get that behind me. I've got to get that out the way. And then I'll look at the second part. So mentally I'm saying to myself, I'm running 18 Ks. And then when that's gone, we'll look at the next one and so forth and so on. So that's where you just come into saying, I've got to now plan my race. Where do I want to be by what sort of time? Because I do a time chart for the guys as well that takes into account the actual course itself. It's not arithmetic. An arithmetic time chart is waste of time, waste of the ink. Don't even bother to have it in your pocket. But my chart takes into account that, like on the down run, for example, the first 18 Ks are generally uphill. It might be a down run, but you're actually climbing out of Maritzburg all the way to Umlaas Road. So you need to understand that you're going to be slower than in the section from there, say, to the back of Inchanga, which is now a lot quicker. Nothing really in your way, a couple of few small uphills and stuff. So knowing the course as well as I know it helps with the planning. But even if you have to go and talk to your colleagues, your club captain, your the Barry Hollands of this world, go and find out what this course is all about and then plan that race accordingly. It's so important to know where you should be at what time because you're trying to get to the end at a given time and you've got to put all those factors in, the fact that you're going to slow down. Generally speaking, there's very, very few people that run negative splits at Comrades. If you're running, and let's overlay that same thing, if you're leaving nothing on the road, if you're a 7.5 hour runner, but you're going to go out and run 9 hours or 9.5 hours, you can more than likely quite easily run a negative split. You can have a super easy half and then sort of turn the wick up in the second half and race a bit. And you can have a negative split. But if you're racing, comrades, negative splits are extremely hard, extremely, extremely hard. So accept that you're just more than likely like most of the other thousands of people that run positive splits. Then accept that you're going to slow down over the last 20K. So you got to build that into your plan again. This is critical that you that this race plan is put together, taking into the course into account, taking you into account. Some people say I'm exceptionally strong over the last 15, 20 Ks because I've got this great mind and I can take the pain. Other people know of themselves that maybe they fade a lot more than others. So you've got to build all that in and all of that goes into the race plan. And once you've planned your race, it's most important to now go and race it, race that plan. So you now can't put all that down, put it down on a chart, and then get to the start line and throw it out the window. I mean, there's absolutely zero point in that. You need to then stick to it, build your chart, and then absolutely stick to it. If you find you're going too fast in the first 10, 15 Ks, slow down. Because, we all get carried away to some extent, at the start line, chariots of fire and shoshaloza, and it's all very emotional and it's incredibly, there's a massive hype going on. And the next thing you bounce out of there and you're supposed to be running, let's say at 6 minutes, okay, and you're funny, you're running at 5:15, okay. Now that is going to, you're going to feel fantastic. Absolutely. A crisp early morning, lovely, thousands of people around you. Everything's incredible. All your mates laughing and joking. And I promise you 30 Ks later, you'll be wishing you weren't doing 5:15, okay, because it'll come back and bite you in the bum. Very sore indeed. So I'll give you a lovely example of sometimes it does get down to much finer numbers if you really are racing, closer to the front end. Great mate of mine got by the name of Tony Dearling. He's a gold medalist at Comrades. He was my mentor when I went for my 6.5 hours. He was my mentor because I understood him to be a better athlete than I was. I mean, he had a gold medal and I was never even close to that. So, he helped me and he said to me, okay, fine, Barry, I want you through the half in 3:10. And I looked at this lot and I computed this lot and I said, yo, 3:10, that's fast. They're through halfway at Comrades, 45 Ks, 3 hours, 10 minutes. That says to me that I must run my first marathon in under 3 hours. And, I just couldn't get my head around that. So this is where, as I said, maybe small margins. And I said to Tony, I said, I'm not going through in 3:10. I'm going through in 3:12. Now, I mean, you could argue and say 2 minutes, how the hell different can that, what difference can that make? Well, it did, because it made not a physical difference. It was a massive mental difference. It meant that I could go through the first marathon in over 3 hours, which was a fantastic sort of relief to me. I can run 3 hours for a marathon quite easily. I mean, I always, in those days, 3 hours for a marathon was really not that difficult. But to go and run two of them back to back and then a bit at the end is quite something. So on the day, in fact, when I ran my 6:29, my first marathon was 3:03 and my second marathon was 3:06. So I was in my comfort zone of running marathons. Yes, I had to put the two together and all those nice things, which I did, thank God, did on the day. But that was the point I'm making here, obviously, is the finite planning. If the faster you're going to go at Comrades, the more finite that plan needs to be. A lovely example in the old days when Fordyce was so, you know, preeminent in dominating Comrades. I used to remember a lovely thing that he had the press conference before the race, and the journalists would say to him, Bruce, are you going to win Comrades? And he'll say, no, not necessary. I will tell you this, however. He said, I'm going to run 5:28. If somebody runs faster, they'll beat me. So that was the point to which his plan, he was running 5:28. And I promise you, if you looked at that year, you would find he ran 5:28. So that plan was absolutely finite. And if somebody ran faster, yeah, they'd beat him. So yeah, planning your race, racing your plan, absolutely critical.
And then I think it comes back to the realistic goals, because, you know, if you're a 2:59 marathoner and you then go, yes, I'm going to go run silver, you race that marathon to run a 2:59.59. So the conversion in realistic terms says maybe a 7:30 is probably just a bit too aggressive, right?
No, exactly right. So your expectations are critical here. And as I said, going back to the statement, knowing who you are, you're 100% right. If I'm going to go and run just on a 3-hour marathon like I did, and then another one, you can't just be a 2:59 marathoner. That's 2:59 means that equates to 7.5 hours. You want to run a 6.5 hour, you've got to be a sub 2:45 marathoner. That's what you've got to get down to. You've got to be a 2:40 marathoner, 2:45 marathoner. So going back to the point I made, 3 hours has got to be relatively easy so that you can do two of them back to back, plus a bit more at the end. So expectations must line up with what you know about your ability. What can you do? You know, as you say, you knowing this great race of ours, just a sub 3, 2:59.59 marathon, if that's what you got racing flat out, then you are a silver medalist, but nothing more than that. I mean, silver medalist is incredible, but you're nothing more than that. Likewise, you can go back with those times. If you're a 3:20, a 3:25 marathoner, you're not a silver medalist. Now you must go the other way. Now your expectations will be 8 hours or, you know, 8.5 hours or whatever.
And then it's too much to go into the whole course. And, you know, you kind of did touch on it then. But for somebody, maybe let's look at a novice, you know, coming for the first time, breaking it down. If you were going to sit down one novice and say, hey, look, this is the course, I've got 30 seconds with you, there's the risk factors. However, here's also where you can have a go. Can you kind of identify a couple of those spots for people listening, and maybe more so towards the novice out there?
Yeah, so let's talk then specifically about the downrun, because what this year is. If we were talking next year, presuming that it's going to be an uprun, we would talk completely differently, because they are two completely different runs. When I talk to people and I say in an audience, I said, okay, how many people here have run 10 Comrades? I'll say, you know, you don't really know the course after 10 Comrades. And they'll look at me a little bit funny, say, hey, but I'm a green number. I'll say, but you've only run 5 up and 5 down. And therefore, you don't really know the course yet, because 5 either way doesn't really give it to you. So we'll talk about the down run. The down run, as I mentioned just now, is a whole bunch of stages. Certainly that first one is not getting a shock when they've told you all about this down run, but you leave Maritzburg and you're climbing and climbing and climbing and climbing. About the only relief you get is when you drop down Polly's. Otherwise, you climb out of Maritzburg to the top of Polly's, you drop down Polly's, which is just under 2Ks, and then you climb up what is the sort of the backside of the little Polly's, and then you, a small drop, and then you're climbing up to Elveston again, and not Elveston, you're climbing up Ashford, and you're climbing up eventually to the highest point, which is Umlaas Road. So the first 18Ks of the down run are a big pull. So you don't get a mental shock at the fact that, you know, they're asking you to climb so many hills on the so-called down run. The next section is really nice. It's right through to the back of Echanga, and that you can now let your legs run a bit. There's no shadow of a doubt. Let your legs go, because there's nothing much in your way. A couple of small uphills, but really nothing major. You're running gently downhill a lot of the time. So that's really super running country. When you get to the back of Echanga, just before halfway, so you go down Echanga, the main hill down into Drummond. So the back of that Echanga hill, from there all the way through halfway and right through to Hillcrest is extremely hard. I say that it's about, from the back of Echanga, it's about 12 Ks or so, 13 Ks. That's very hard. Very, very hard section of the Comrades. Because you climb up the back of Echanga, which is a big hill, you drop down into Drummond, and then you've got a horrible, horrible climb all the way up to Elveston, up to the radio mast. And then you do a little bit of drop down, but then you're climbing all the way to the top of Boortes Hill. And then you drop down Boortes Hill, and then you still got the climb up to Hillcrest. So from the back of Echanga to right through to Hillcrest is a really nasty section. And again, my advice there is just turn the taps off, just survive those hills, let them all come to you. There's lots of people, wonderful, wonderful people there. I mean, literally thousands of people in Drummond, lots and lots and lots of people all the way through Boortes Hill, and at the top of Boortes Hill, all the Kersney boys are there, fantastic. When you get down to the bottom of Boortes Hill, just before you go up to Hillcrest, thousands of people down at the bottom of the hill again. So, but a very, very hard section. Lovely people, but just turn the taps off and just survive it. When you get to Hillcrest, then if you're going to make your time, any time you're going for, whether it's Silvers or Bull Rowans or whatever's you're doing, it doesn't matter. That's when you've got to have some legs and you've got to get going, because from there, all the way down, certainly to Pinetown, is very, very quick indeed. Absolutely nothing in your way. Very, very quick indeed. And that's running country. A massive, massive word of caution here. Fields Hill is 3 kilometers down from the top of Fields down into Pinetown, and it's an absolute graveyard. So many comrades have been left behind on the down run by people thinking, hell, I'm going to smash it down Fields Hill. And you do that at your peril, because you can land up in Pinetown with no legs at all, and it's survival all the way through to Durban. So from top of Hillcrest all the way down, really great running country, down Fields Hill, which is easy as long as you go take it easy. Pinetown is always hard because it's normally hot by then. It's flat and a little bit sort of demoralizing, because you're kind of close to the finish but not close enough to grab it yet. And then you've got some nasties after that. You've got, I mean, Cowies Hill is a real nasty, steep hill, not very long, only about just over a K long, but nasty. And then you've got the lovely, lovely section from the top of Cowies all the way down really to the bottom of 45th Cutting is fantastic. Very, very fast section there. And you can pick up a lot of time if you're racing. And then obviously from at the bottom of that 45th Cutting is a very hard hill. But once you get over that, it's down, and then Sherwood onto the highway, and you've got Mabel, which is your last hill. And then from the top of Mabel, about 4Ks home, and it's downhill all the way to the finish. So you need to be very mindful of some severe uphills on the down run. And you need to be very mindful of the fact that if you look at the profile of Comrades, the massive drop from the top of Hillcrest all the way to the finish, it's a massive net drop. And you just got to know that your legs are going to be absolutely shattered. If you can walk for 2-3 days after the downrun, if you walk straight away the next day, that you haven't run hard enough.
Yeah, tell me about it. I kind of, thanks so much for taking us through. And for me, I just really identify the first 25 to 30Ks that it can make or break your race either way. If you go too hard, you're going to break it. And if you go too soft, you're never going to catch it up. That's almost where, and it might sound so silly because it's in the dark, it's big crowds, but it can go either way for you. You either get to 50K or see, and you capitulate, or you get to 50 and 60 and think, oh, geez, I'm half an hour or an hour down. You're never going to catch that. So, and it probably comes from time and attempts, but you really have to get your race sorted within that first 30Ks because it'll make or break either way.
Absolutely. I mean, it's critical. The down and the up, I mean, more so on the up, I'll be honest with you. The up, you have to get your pacing right because the first half of the up run is more than likely the hardest marathon you'll run in your life. I mean, there's not many harder runs in marathons in the world, mass participation runs in the world that are harder than the first half of up run, Comrades. I mean, it's an absolute monster. So yeah, you're 100% right to say that first 30Ks, you need to get it. You can either blow it, as you say, or just be too conservative. Look, if you've been conservative, that's the better, far better way than blowing it, obviously. Because, you know, there's no coming back. If you blow it, Comrades, there's no game coming over. Back.
Yeah.
No, it's game over and come back next year. Look, you'll survive, you'll get home, but you're certainly unlikely to achieve your time, you know. So, yeah.
And then just a couple more, Barry, but also we mentioned that the climbs out of halfway, and Elveston is always something that I tell people, especially novices, to say that is one of the biggest drags you're ever going to get in a race. But don't get sucked into too much walking. You actually do have to do some running because you're going to bleed time. And that's if you're chasing a time there. I remember running out of halfway and I could feel the 9-hour bus coming. And I thought, geez, I'm supposed to be 40 minutes ahead of you. And once they came past, I was in that lazy stage and you get sucked in by walking and walking. And before you know it again, it's too late. So you do actually need to run. You can't just walk most of the hills. If you're chasing a time, you need to be running.
Again, you're 100% right. And I think, again, this comes back to the mental application. There's absolutely nothing wrong with walking at Comrades. I mean, it's a very, very severe race. I mean, I've only ever run one Comrades in my life where I haven't walked at all. That was when I ran my 6:29. I didn't walk one step. But those are exceptional days and those are exceptional times. And even when I've run sub-7, I've had a few little walks. I'm talking about maybe 30 or 40 meters. And that was more just to kind of calm the mental side, to have a little mental break, more than a physical break. But you're right. When you're running the slower times at Comrades, walking is very much part of it. But here's the thing. This is the kicker. You have to set a point. You walk to a point. You say, I am running. I'm running now. Now I'm going to walk. I need to walk. But I'm walking to that tree or to that car, you know, make sure the car is not going to pull off and move ahead because then it kills you mentally. But I'm walking to that tree or I'm walking to that whatever. Pick a point, not too far away, you know, what's maybe 200 meters, whatever. I'm walking to that point. And when you get to that point, you have to run. That you just have to have that mental application because what you said just now, you will bleed away time so fast, it's unbelievable. And suddenly, you know, you're going for 9.5 hours, suddenly 9.5 can become 10.5. In the blink of an eye, you can waste an hour walking that you didn't need to have. You could have lots of those walks still, but there must be controlled walks. Walk, and then I'm now running. And especially on those big hills, walk, run, walk, run, walk, run. You know, if you do a little exercise with yourself, even if it's out in a training run, do it. You just get somebody, get one of your mates to walk, run, and you just walk, and you'll see how far that person pulls ahead of you. It's actually quite frightening. Just that those bits of running, 200 meters, 300 meters of running, they'll pull way, way, way ahead of you. And that's, you have to have that mental application again to say, I'm going to walk. Okay, now I'm going to walk. But when I get to that point, that bollard next to the road, that whatever, I'm running. And then run and run and run. And you'll find that as you get towards the end of the race, and if you're mentally strong, it'll almost become a bit of a game, because you'll say, okay, fine, I'm running now, but I'm going to walk when I get to that tree. Then you'll get to that tree and say, no, I'm not walking now. I can go further. I can do more. So you'll push yourself on and push yourself on. And again, it just becomes that mental application to control the walking. Walking's part of it. Absolutely happy with that, but control it.
And then what does a successful Comrades Day look like for you? You know, you're sitting in the shower or the bath at night and you go, okay, time is great. But, you know, through experience, the people you met along the way, what does that look like for you to go, geez, I had a great day out?
Used to have the best test of all. I had my 10-minute test. So if I had my first beer within 10 minutes of the finish, I'd had a great day. If it took me an hour to have my first beer, I'd had a terrible day. I never didn't have a beer, not once. I always had a beer after Comrades. But that was my test always. But in truth, I think it's all those things that you talk about rolled up into one. It's the day you had out there, the people you ran with. You know, to me, I go back to what is this race called? It's called Comrades. It's all about camaraderie. It's all about the people out there, the people you're running with. And the camaraderie extends to the crowds as well. The crowds, you have this incredibly unique experience with them. That you pass them, and in a millisecond, you almost bond with them. And then you on, and you're bonding with the next one. They don't know you, you don't know them. But I find it's like having a New Zealand rugby crowd that you appreciate because they know their rugby. They know what they're seeing out there. They know what's going on. They understand what the guys out there are going through. And the Comrades people on the course are in that same category. They know what's going on. They know what you are. They know where they are on the course. You know, if they are 30 Ks into the race, they know you've got 60 Ks to go. You know, and vice versa. If they know they're in the last 30 Ks of the race, they know what you're going through by that stage. So a knowledgeable crowd out on the course are what you feed off. And I love the relationship I have with that crowd. I don't even know them. Yes, there's obviously some people out there that know you. And nowadays with me, a lot of the people out there know me. But it's just a unique kind of relationship. And if I've had a great day out there, it's been a great relationship with the crowds out there and the guys I've run with. You know, the guys you run with from your club or your mates, or that's fantastic. Comrades is all about how it started, you know, the comrades from the First World War.
And a question I always ask a guest at the end of the interview is, if you had a message for your younger self, what would it be?
Well, my younger self is almost encapsulated this year in my son Ross, who is running his first Comrades. And he's a guy, like a youngster, he's 24 years old, so he's not dissimilar to when I first ran, a little bit older. And he's a pretty reasonable athlete. And he said to me the other day, you know, we spoke about his training and what time he should expect to run and all of that. And we sort of said, well, he should run maybe around about 8.5 hours. He's a little bit of a lazy trainer, so maybe not quite where his dad would have been. And then he had done a little bit of research and he discovered that my first time was 7:52. Then he said to me on the phone the other day, he said, Dad, you know, I think I might try for 7:51. So So my younger self might be doing it this year, but if I was talking to my younger self, I would say that I wouldn't change much. If I changed anything, was maybe learning some of the lessons I learned later, but learning them earlier. That pursuit of the 7 hours. Why couldn't I have sat down with myself many years before that, and found a way to run faster instead of spending all those years in the doldrums and not being able to get where I wanted to go? I got there eventually, but I think I would ask self to just learn a bit quicker. I wasn't the brightest oak at school, so it maybe came through my running. I was a slow learner.
Do you just let him be now then, or do you kind of say, hey, maybe let's just be a bit realistic? Or do you, it's part of the learning where you kind of go, maybe you need to go out and get burnt, or he goes out and runs a 7:51.
I suspect it at 7:51 he could blow, because I don't think his training has been fully to full spec that it should have been. But he's a handy athlete. He's certainly got some talent. Whether he's got the head, we'll find out. But he's shown quite good promise over long trail races. He's raced like 80K trail races. So he's done distance. We'll see. I am mentoring him now and saying, just calm down. Maybe be very happy with an 8:15, an 8:20 or whatever this year. And then he wants to run my 50th with me next year. So that'll be very slow. And then after that, if he's still keen on comrades, then go and get a bit fitter and then go and race, But, knowing him, I think he might be looking for 7:51.
Yeah, I was going to say, I dare say he'll be going 7:51.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Barry. I think we just scratched the surface, but, a lot of hopefuls for in 23 days' time. Hopefully they get to have a listen of this and either kind of, really plan that race and get what they should. But I think a lot can be taken out of that, planning your race and then going to race it as well.